Today on Straight Talk Africa are the priorities of the African Union the same as those of the continent's main stakeholders? In other words, the vast majority of the African people. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, March 4th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll have a conversation with Elastus Mwencha, the deputy chairperson for the African Union.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience has responded to our topic through Facebook and emails, comments. And we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, few can argue that the new chairman of the African Union does not have experience. But some observers wonder whether he is the right man for the job. Either way, my colleague Paul Sisco has more on the story.
Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe was recently appointed chairman of the African Union. In a lavish birthday ceremony last week, the 91-year-old leader outlined his agenda for the continent.
He fought successfully for political independence. Now, in contemporary times, the economic empowerment struggle is still ongoing, and it is yet to be won in most of Africa.
Since the AU's first summit in 2002,
I declare this first session, therefore, of the summit of the African Union open.
Its goals have been the same. Ethiopian Prime Minister and former African Union Chairman Haile Mariam Desalegn, speaking at an African Union summit in Addis Ababa in 2013.
That by the time Africa celebrates the centenary of the OAU and AU, by the year 2063, we will have achieved the dreams of our founders for a peaceful, prosperous, and united Africa.
However, the organization continues to struggle with good governance and security issues in South Sudan, Nigeria, and elsewhere. There has been uneven but determined progress on the 2015 Millennium Development Goals. Sam Kutesa is the current president of the UN General Assembly.
MDGs have had significant impact on many African countries, although it has been uneven across goals and countries. We should spare no effort to accelerate progress towards achieving the MDGs in the remaining period.
In recent years, the African Union has overseen significant economic gains. In the last decade, the continent's trade has doubled with the rest of the world and nearly tripled between African countries, thanks in large measure to trade blocks and policies and continent-wide infrastructure, communication, and transportation improvements. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our studios is our distinguished guest, Elastus Mwencha. He is the deputy chairperson for the African Union. I have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to finally host you in Studio 52, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. I'm equally honored. I do listen to you from time to time, and today we have an opportunity to discuss.
You might, of course, add that the last time we actually linked up was last year, April 26, in the Tanzanian commercial capital at a State House luncheon celebrating Muungano between Tanganyika and the island of Zanzibar.
Thank you. Yes, I remember that occasion, which was also very joyous to see the Muungano, the Tanzania, that has survived over 50 years now.
That is correct. That is correct. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. It is, of course, a pleasure to have you here, really, in your capacity as the deputy chairperson of the African Union, because prior to that, of course, you remember, You used to come and speak on behalf of COMESA, of which you were the man, the boss.
That's right. And I remember we discussed many things. Amongst them was AGOA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we came here at that time, particularly in the late 90s, advocating for AGOA.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy when I look back 15 years back since AGOA to see what has happened and looking forward to what should be coming in the next 15 years or so.
How do you find Addis Ababa, the Ethiopian capital, of course, which is the seat of the African Union? You spent many, many years living in Lusaka.
Yes, I've only been in Addis for about 7 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say, it's a city that is growing in leaps and bounds. Infrastructure, there is transportation, housing, and this is also reflecting the country, because Ethiopia, as you know, has been achieving a growth rate of over 10%.
Mm-hmm.
For a decade or so, and you can see that change that is coming on. For instance, if you come to Ethiopia in the next 6 months or so, you'll travel on a rail.
Mm-hmm.
in the city of Addis Ababa, and this was done in 3 years, which I thought was a record time.
There's no question that the skyline looks tantalizingly impressive.
Mm.
But of course, there are other people who will say, yes, that is a good thing. But what about the issue of human rights? What about the issue of press freedom? What about the issues of freedom of expression?
I don't know. I mean, I live in Addis, and I don't feel squeezed that way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you are talking about human rights, Ethiopia is going to have elections in May. And let's see how that campaign goes on. How the opposition will be able to campaign, let's see how it happens. So I don't think I can prejudge that before I see what happens.
Do you sincerely believe in these elections, which a lot of African rulers, someone might say, actually characterize as periodic elections, when in fact, if you look at the mechanism, you look at the dynamics, you look at the quality of these elections, there are other people who will come and say, no, these are in fact not elections. They are selections for governments in power, essentially, to stay in power.
I think that would be a very unfair generalization. I wouldn't say that all elections normally produce the best of the results one would hope. You sometimes see in an election challenges that may be there that the electoral commission or the electoral body is not as strong as you would wish to see. You might see that instruments for information, if there is a state media that does not give room to opposition, in some cases you might find a situation where the political parties themselves are just vehicles for elections, and not offering much in terms of choice,
mm-hmm.
or ideology or ideas. But I would say those are very few. Generally, if you look at Africa, I think the continent, the youth and many others have taken their destiny in their own hands. And you can see that they are impatient. I mean, you have seen Arab Spring and all this. So Africa is now offering really good elections, apart from those instances I mentioned.
Of course, you could talk about what happened last year in October in Ouagadougou, in Burkina Faso.
Precisely.
But that is Burkina Faso. We had some Tahrir Square sort of change in Egypt.
Exactly.
But you can see that the more things change in Egypt, the more they seem to remain the same.
I'm not sure that's true, because I think the Egyptians were looking for change. And when they found the change was not addressing the kind of aspirations and ideas they had, they stepped back. And you can see now there is momentum on the ground to try and recover the lost ground from what people had seen what they wanted to see as change.
Given that, Mr. Mwencha, without taking anything away from you, you are a diplomat. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Well, you can say so. I'm
yes,
a diplomat.
You are a diplomat. And if, in fact, you are a diplomat, to what extent, frankly, in that particular situation, are you able to speak from the deepest, better part of the bottom, for example, of your Kisii heart and soul in Kenya? Aren't you in a situation that is very, very difficult, frankly, where you must probably speak or say things that reflect perhaps the consensus of an institution that you work for?
Well, I don't know. The institution I work for stands for democracy. It stands for governance. In fact, if you look at some of our core programs, mm-hmm. let me give you an example of the African Review Mechanism. I've not seen that kind of instrument anywhere in the world, that African leaders can sit in one room and look at each other and say things are not going right in country X. You see, what we Africans don't do, and that's perhaps where the rest of the world always misunderstands, that we are too gentle with each other, we don't use mega diplomacy. We don't come out to shout in the streets mm-hmm. what we tell each other as neighbors mm-hmm. or as friends. Mm-hmm. We like to do things in a civil way. But when we are on our own, we talk to each other as it is.
You talk to each other as it is?
Exactly.
Well, there used to be a time, of course, the precursor of the African Union, which was the Organization of African Unity, the OAU, where you could not interfere in the internal affairs of a member state.
That policy is long gone.
Now you say no indifference. Mm-hmm. But what extent, in fact, is that policy sincerely being enforced?
That's part of the reason why I said if you look at the African peer review mechanism, countries can speak out in matters affecting countries other than their own. And you have seen us intervene in those countries where we feel that things are not going right. I mean, when there is a crisis in any country, African Union will suspend such a country from its membership.
If somebody has shot his way to power using an AK-47.
Absolutely.
But not if somebody, in fact, has rigged an election or has stolen an election.
You see, this is now a question of perception. And I don't know which instances you could give me that would say somebody has stolen or rigged, because in some cases where you have had elections which are close, the opposition will cry foul that they were, you know, the election was lost. Mm-hmm. But if you find where the election is truly and genuinely being stolen, the people will refuse. The people will go to the streets and refuse. And we have seen that happen. Or if they perceive that there is a move to change things in a manner that is not in line with people's aspiration, they refuse. So the people themselves stand out there. And I don't think you can assume that the ordinary people in the streets don't know what they are doing. They don't know what they want. They know what they want, and they stand for their rights.
There are a lot of countries on the continent, and I'm not frankly going to name them, but there are a lot of obvious countries where people want one thing, but because there is absolutely no space, they have no flexibility for demanding or getting what they want. They just give the impression that they are getting along, because you have governments in the power which use the means of violence, for example, to intimidate their people, which, for example, even go to the extent of making sure that unless you are a card-carrying member of the ruling party, you can never even get access to a job.
If that were to happen, it can only happen for a short time. And as the saying goes, you can't fool all the people all the time. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that when I look at the African profile now, the population, no such leader can survive for a long time. And so those instances, if there are, there are very few and fine between.
When you talk about no such leader can survive for a long time, I mean, there are leaders right from Equatorial Guinea, Angola, Zimbabwe, Uganda, Cameroon. I can go on naming countries where those types of leaders have actually been in power for more than three decades.
And all the ones you mentioned, there are elections in those countries. And those elections produce those results. The people accept those results. You know, sometimes, you know, there is a saying that it is not easy for you to go and look at the people of country X and say, this is what you want.
Mm.
Let the people themselves pick out what they want. And if the people elect and deserve such a leader, then I don't think you and I have the right to go and say, you have elected so and so, so many times.
I see.
I mean, in any case, how many countries in the world have we seen other where leaders stay longer than that?
I hear you.
Yeah.
Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Africa Issues. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
The African Union was first envisioned at the 1999 summit in Libya. It later replaced the Organization of African Unity, which was created in 1963. The AU Constitution was entered into force in May 2001, and the group was formally established in July of 2002. The African Union is a partnership between governments and all segments of African civil society, particularly women, youth, and the private sector. The African body has 54 member states, and its newest member is South Sudan, which became independent on July 9, 2011. The only African state that is not a member is Morocco.
Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. And of course, we are here with Erastus Mwencha, the deputy chairperson of the African Union. Talk to us a little bit again about the African Union. To what extent, frankly, does it really have the capability and the ability to enforce whatever resolutions that are passed? Because the last time I checked, you have no sovereign status.
Whatever that means, because the sovereign status is ceded by member states.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the Constitutive Act, that is a progressive aspect. If you remember, the African Union, first of all, it was Organization of African Unity.
Right.
With very limited mandate at the level of what was then called a secretariat.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have what you call a commission. This commission is given quite a lot of areas in which it can speak on behalf of the member states. If I give you an example, for instance, climate change. The negotiations have been carried mm-hmm. under the banner of the African Union. There are a number of areas where, as a commission, we can take a position that is ratified by member states and implement those aspects that member states have given or ceded power. But as I said, there is a transformation also envisaged, inbuilt in this transformation mechanism, that, for instance, if you look at European Union, later on might grant the Commission, say, exclusive mandate in areas of, say, trade or such kind of aspects. So this is an evolving agenda, and therefore I wouldn't see it as a static issue.
But what about some who will say, wait a minute, Mr. Moencha, the African Union really is like a reflection of essentially the total sum of the membership of the African Union. And you know as well as I do that, frankly, the only requirement you need to be a member, perhaps, is maybe to be an independent entity, with the exception of Western Sahara?
Well, you are right in what you are saying, that if you are trying to compare with the other regional groupings, for instance...
Like the European Union. Yes.
European Union started with a project, and any member states that was to join had to fulfill certain mandate in order for that to join. And because the bar was already set rather high.
Mm.
The African Union, well, on the other hand, started with the mechanism that the countries that were independent came together and formed the union.
Mm.
There was no criteria at that time. Yes, it was. But now that they are in the bus, they are now starting to progressively change that level.
Mm.
And that level will, for instance, require, for instance, recently, member states have decided to say, let's fast track implementation of certain aspects, which means you'll see a situation like what is in the European Union. You have Schengen, countries which are ready to implement free movement of people, but others are not.
Mm.
African Union is also taking that path, where we'll say, certain programs, let's go with the coalition of the able, coalition of the willing, move forward. Because integration agenda is not a commandist agenda that somebody will come and declare or dictate and say countries move in unison. It is a matter of accepting and willing and ceding your national sovereignty. But you enable those who are ready to move faster to move faster.
Mm.
And this is happening.
Talk to us about some of the areas, of course, in which you have a mandate and, in fact, you have been able to make a difference. For example, trade, promoting trade on the continent and between the continent and, of course, the rest of the world.
Yes. As you rightly mentioned in your intro, if you look at Africa's trade with the rest of the world, has doubled. The numbers are big because it was 600 billion, now it's 1.2 billion, trillion, sorry. But in terms of intra-African trade, it has gone 300% from just about 60 billion to about 170 or 280 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason behind is this, and you mentioned two, is one, regional integration groupings. SADC, COMESA, East African Community, there is a lot of intra-African trade that is taking place within those blocks.
Mm.
And there is genuine effort to remove obstacles to trade in those areas. The second, Africa is also now diversifying. In fact, when you look inside, you see trade that is taking place is also manufactured, which shows that Africa is starting to diversify. And the third one is infrastructure is getting better because... Now, I'll give you an example. Goods leaving Mombasa to Kigali used to take more than 3 weeks. Now you take inside 1 week. And that is because this region, they are now removing those barriers of moving goods.
Mm.
So things are moving in that direction.
Because of being members of the East African Community.
Correct, correct.
Very interesting. Mm. What about trade between the United States and trade between Africa and... And China, for example, it looks like, of course, more recently, you seem to be doing much better with the Chinese than with the Americans, correct?
Yes. Trade with Americans, at the moment, the total trade is just about $60
billion. Right.
And this has also grown, I would say, from around 8 to 10 billion,
right.
That it was some 15 years ago.
European Union, about 200 billion?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. China is now reached, it was about 10 billion,
yes.
But it's approaching 300 billion.
In such a very short time.
Exactly.
What is it that China is doing that the other people are not doing?
Now, this is part of the reason we're here in the United States, to try and advocate for and move forward the agenda of AGOA. Because U.S., distance-wise from Africa, has had its own impact in the sense that the countries that are around the U.S., perhaps outcompete Africa in terms of exports to the United States. Whereas the Chinese economy and the African economy, there is some synergy between the two economies, that Africa is producing products that China needs most, namely in the energy sector, in the raw material sector, and so forth. So what we are here also trying to talk to the American Congress, the American administration, is how America could also occupy space that America could justifiably occupy, because America has got technology, America has got a huge market, America has also capital. And so America could invest in Africa, but relax certain aspects like rules of origin, or make it easier, or develop infrastructure, transport mechanism that can bring goods from Africa to the U.S., for instance, allowing direct flights or developing mechanism for bringing some of the products to America. Take the case of, say, flowers. I know, for instance, if you look at flowers coming to America, they go to Europe, then come to America, and then they go to, say, Los Angeles. In Europe, it's one hop. Now, isn't it possible for us to have that direct?
Direct.
And those are some of the things that could be done to change this trade pattern.
Well, I think there was a time when you're supposed to have, for example, direct flights between the United States, in fact, and Kenya. Delta. What happened? I mean, these days, Delta, of course, flies direct to Ghana. It flies direct to Nigeria. It flies direct to Egypt. How come it's not yet flying to Kenya to get those flowers and what have you?
Only Americans can answer that question. But I know that they, at one stage, they talked of concerns about security at the airport, mixing passengers, incoming and outgoing passengers. But from what I know, those aspects have now been addressed, and one hopes that this is one of the things that could be done very soon.
What about the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit that took place here last year in August? Can you give us any report card in terms of whether there has, in fact, been any follow-up?
Well, very historic summit, and I thought at the end of the summit, the leaders exchanged their views, views which centered on how to build a strong foundation for Africa-U.S. partnership into the future. The themes that were discussed were around peace and security, and there is a lot that has been happening in that area, working together with the U.S., and Africa in addressing challenges of peace and security, because now this has become a global commodity or a challenge. And Africa, U.S. have developed a mechanism on how to take that common platform to address peace and security challenges. Issues of development. If you remember, at that summit, there were quite a number of side events that were organized. One of them was on, say, Power Africa.
Power Africa.
And I can tell you that one of the scorecards, we're now seeing American investors coming to Africa, particularly taking advantage of energy, because America produces energy equipment, but also has America's technology for areas like geothermal and so forth.
We'll continue. Time happens not to be our best ally. You're tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jallo. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from you, our audience, through social media. Meanwhile, here is our letter of the week.
Pardington Matekwe from Zimbabwe writes, "I think good governance is key. If we achieve that, then we are home free. It covers reduction of corruption, good health facilities, education, infrastructure, and political stability. Good governance comes with tolerance, how we handle different views in a country, be it political, tribal, or religious views. We will not promote tourism and trade if we as Africans continue to fight each other. The general citizens do not benefit from corruption.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. African leaders appear committed to building an Africa-wide rapid response peacekeeping partnership to address major issues and crises on the continent. In many people's minds, that's a huge challenge. And that leads us to our question of the week, asking, what do you think should be Africa's top issues and priorities? Well, thank you for using all our social media platforms to communicate to us. Let's begin with a comment from Ibrahim Magara in Nairobi, Kenya, who writes, Africa should just simply fix leadership and governance. We have what it takes to take this continent to the next level. But no doubt, our leaders are a big letdown. Well, another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOA Africa Issues. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. Let's go to a tweet right now from Kenya, again, from someone who writes, African leaders need to up their gains in the fight against vices like corruption, impunity, tribalism, and nepotism. So, Shaka and Mr. Mwencha, what do you make of those comments?
Well, very interesting. Mwencha, how do you react to that?
Yes, the first comment, when the comment that Magara says, we need to fix governance and the leadership. It's true that in Africa, this is one of the biggest challenges that we have had.
Mm.
And that leadership, I want to see it, not necessarily talking about political leadership. I want to see leadership all around. That leadership that is visionary, leadership that can translate what Africa's potential is from being potential to actualization.
Mm.
And there is no justification whatsoever that 50 years down the road, we should be seeing certain levels of development within the continent, levels of poverty. And I would call this poverty of the mind, which means we must reparate.
Mm.
And these are true, and we need to fix them. And I don't think one should run away from this kind of thing.
But what about, for example, an observation made by U.S. President Barack Obama, who once said that even with prosperity, without freedom, the freedom of expression, for example, that it is a form of poverty?
Well, I mean, that's a truism. But one can also argue that where there is a lot of poverty, it is easy to manipulate the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so economic empowerment is extremely important. their models, which were developed some time back,
mm-hmm.
those who said benevolent dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that there are countries, for instance, in the Tigers,
like Singapore,
that were said
Malaysia,
they developed because they had strong leadership that was not necessarily democratic.
But they had a sense of nationalism.
Exactly.
Mariama, please share some more of our audience feedback.
Well, indeed, Shaka, will move on to a posting from Zalan Lamini from Banzile in Swaziland, who writes, Africa's top priorities should be stopping the violence, the wars, the unjust killing of fellow Africans with bombs, the social injustice, and the greed in our beloved leaders. Well, let's look at another posting, this time from Gelder Aisega from Kampala in Uganda, who writes, my priorities are stopping corruption, poverty, salary inequality, poor roads, taxation inequalities, substandard goods, and having our lives ruled by dictator. And let's take a look at one more comment before we leave from Joka, who says that his priorities would be stopping HIV and AIDS and the high unemployment rate. Well, Shaka, and again, Mr. Mwencha, we have a range of opinions here. Your take on these ones.
Mr. Mwencha, your reaction?
I think what I see from the three comments, the two are really talking about governance. And that's true. Because the high cost of doing business sometimes in Africa is not due to lack of, say, infrastructure.
Mm.
It is this rent-seeking bureaucrats that make it very difficult for things to happen. You know, we have seen evidence where, when I talked about early on, trucks moving from, say, Mombasa
to Kigali.
Kigali.
The Rwandan capital.
21 days.
Mm.
It's not that the road was changed.
The
it
road
is the software
the
that was changed.
But
remove the roadblocks. Make it more transparent. And that is
of
business.
Of red tape.
Yes.
I see.
But you see, the other commentator is talking about the challenge of disease and unemployment, which is a major challenge in the continent, creating jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I would say priority number one for Africa now is to create jobs. Number two is jobs. Number three is jobs. If you create jobs in Africa, that is the transformation that Africa needs at the moment.
But how do you do that if the leadership is, for the most part, preoccupied, frankly, with nepotism, with political patronage, essentially with really being, in a sense, very narrow-minded?
But, Shaka, I think you are a statistician. And when you talk, you can't talk of Africa like Africa is a country.
No.
Africa is an amalgamation of 54 member states.
I understand.
And talking of Africa as if every leader in Africa wakes up for corruption every morning, there are hardworking
I understand.
Leaders in
you,
the country.
You say the 54. By the way, how do we get 54? Because there are 54 member states as far as African Union is concerned.
Yes.
And there are still, again, also 54 African countries. What about Morocco? Have we decided that Morocco is no longer part of us?
It's not us deciding. That is Morocco deciding.
But
Morocco is the one which walked away.
Of Africa?
Morocco is the one which walked away.
So if you brought Morocco in now, would they be 55 African countries?
It's not for us to bring in. If Morocco came back, the city is still there. Morocco can come when they need.
But geographically, it is still part of Africa, correct?
It is. So when we talk of African Union, we talk of those members who are members of the Union. Morocco is not a member of the Union.
But it participates in as far as the African Development Bank is concerned.
Those are institutions that...
Which is part of, in a way?
Well, the African Development Bank has membership outside Africa also.
I see.
Yes.
Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. And please don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll talk about the fighting in South Sudan. African leaders meeting in Addis Ababa say stop the conflict or face sanctions. We'll have that discussion and more right here next week on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much and welcome back. Today's topic, of course, is Africa's top issues and priorities. A conversation with our distinguished guest, Elastus Mwencha. He is the deputy chairperson for the African Union. I have to say again that, of course, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you again on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. It's always also a privilege for me to have an opportunity to talk to you.
The feeling is mutual, Mr. Mwencha.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Mwencha, you know, of course, that we have trouble spots in Africa. We do have, of course, South Sudan. You know as well as I do that yesterday the UN Security Council essentially decided to impose sanctions on South Sudan. To what extent is that move helpful, really, to finding a peaceful resolution of the problem?
I think everybody's getting impatient. What I see Security Council saying is that they're waiting for this peace negotiation is really been too long. And that is shared by many who feel that there are innocent people that are dying out there. There are internally displaced people that really are suffering out there. And the sooner that we can conclude these negotiations, the better. But of course, putting a gun on people's head to say finish negotiation is one thing, and finishing negotiations that will last is quite another.
But what about the fact that, it was in December, I remember, 2013, when then President, Salva Kiir Mayardit alleged that a former Vice President, Dr. Riek Machar, had actually carried out an abortive military coup. When you look at all the evidence around, really, there is almost no evidence, in fact, that there was an attempted coup. Now, what happens from what we are hearing, that in fact, this deal, when it is agreed upon, South Sudan will pretty much return to the status before that alleged coup, December 15. Does that solve anything, really?
Well,
South Sudan, or is it about individuals sharing positions, really?
Well, I hear you asking three questions. One, what really happened? And two, where are we going with these peace talks? And I don't know whether that is been talked enough in terms of what happened. But I know that the consensus out there is that it is within SPLA where the problem is.
It's a
political problem.
Right.
It is an ideological problem.
Right.
Within the party itself.
Mm.
And so the party wrangles have swallowed in the entire country into what now has become a South Sudan crisis. And as the leaders are coming out of it, I think the biggest challenge I see is the architecture of the new arrangement that will make it comfortable for both, the government now and what is seen as SPLA in opposition, so that they can cohabit together. And if that is what you call return to the position that they were, if that position guarantees stability, if it guarantees, peace for the country to move to an election when you can have a new dispensation, so be it. And I think that is what everybody would hope, that these negotiations shouldn't be a permanent situation,
right,
but enabled the country to address those challenges that precipitate this crisis, so that when they go into an election, they can emerge with a new environment.
So the international community is prepared to accept a scenario whereby the absence of war is pretty much translated into peace and stability?
I think you're missing the point here, Shaka. The idea is not simply to have an agreement. That's why it's taken long, for the sake of an agreement.
Right.
If that would have been the case, that would have been done a long time back. The agreement is to, first of all, have an agenda that will move the country to a post-conflict sustainable development. And that is the inbuilt mechanism.
Hopefully.
The structure of power sharing is one thing. Then move to an election, which will also embrace reforms that will enable the country to move ahead.
You know, of course, we have had two scenarios on the African continent lately. We had in your own country, post 2007 elections, we had a government of national unity. Zimbabwe, you also remember 2008. We had a government of national unity. What did those governments of national unity resolve?
Well, in as far as the fact that the country was able to run away from a civil war, internal conflict,
right,
to a situation now you had an agenda.
Mm.
I remember, for instance, in Kenya, there were four agenda items that were done as part of the program of that, and they were addressed. And the country then moved forward. And those agendas, some of them, would take longer to implement. Others have been implemented.
Okay.
I think at least the country moved away from that precipitous situation that was moving to the cliff. And I think that is a great achievement.
Hope is not a postponement.
Yeah.
A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa to participate in our discussion. Please call us at 202-619-3111. This country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidui. And let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Steve from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Mr. Shaka Stanley. How are you?
I am hugely terrific. How are you today, Steve?
I'm doing very fine.
What is your question, sir?
Okay, I only have one question to the deputy person of AU.
Yes.
So far, Southern Sudan being one of our youngest countries in Africa, what is their major role to bring back their stability, peace, and political leadership in that youngest country?
Thank
okay,
you.
The second, last week there was an allegation over the media that the Kenyan government is supporting the Riek Machar group against Mr. Salva Kiir. Is that true from Mr. Deputy? Thank you so much.
That is very interesting because, of course, someone might also that you might say that Ugandan president is actually supporting President Salva Kiir Mayardit, even with UPDF to boot.
Well, the last question I cannot answer.
Okay.
I think that allegation can only be directed to Kenya or Uganda. But the first question is, what is the African Union doing to really bring peace and stability to the youngest country in the continent?
Right.
First of all, the negotiations that are taking place in Addis Ababa are under the guarantee of the African Union, but spearheaded by IGAD.
Mm.
And for that, Africa has got observers, African Union has got observers there, and the African Union is fully packing the process. As you know, that African Union has also had peace observers on the ground,
right,
to make sure that, you know, we reduce conflict during these negotiations. But I think the most important thing is, yes, there is concerted effort, there is agreement even at the level of African Union that this peace must be given a chance, and there is commitment on the part of even the belligerents,
right,
that they seek peace to move forward.
Thank you. Let's go to Gus from Uganda. Good evening, Gus. You are most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Hello, Gus, are you there? I'm afraid Gus is not there. Let's go to West Africa. Good evening, Francis from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Well, I'm Gaga, not Francis.
You are who?
Haruna Gaga, Gaga, Pastor Gaga.
Gaga, Haruna Gaga from Nigeria?
Yeah.
I stand corrected, Haruna.
Okay, sorry.
I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Nigerian heart. Forgive me for that.
Okay.
What is your question, sir?
My problem is, why should the African leaders now not learn from Nelson Mandela, who suffered in the prison for years, yet he came to serve his nation for only one term and stepped down? For most African leaders today would like to stay beyond the scope of their two terms and to the point of the death of millions of people, especially Nigeria. The people who died in Nigeria during this struggle of political struggle are more than the people that died during the Civil War in 1966. Are the Nigerian or other African leaders not feeling the pain of losing their loved ones just for the sake of power? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would you like to respond to Haruna?
Yes, Haruna. Haruna, you saying that, you know, African leaders are not keen to serve only two terms mandate. I don't know. I mean, again, this is a question of how you read the African constitutions, because I know many of them do provide for two terms. Where there is that provision, I think I've seen leaders come and go after two terms.
It is true.
And that has happened. So let's not generalize so much.
But there are also a lot of other African countries where, honestly, you have heard what some will say is a sort of political, a shifting of political constitutional goalposts. Yeah.
Yes. And normally when such leaders start doing it, I know of a country where there was a leader, after two terms tried to change, the people resisted.
Well, we can talk about, of course, Zambia.
Yes.
Frederick Chiruba.
I know.
Bakiri Muruzi in Malawi.
Exactly.
In fact, you could even say General Olusegun Obasanjo retired but not tired. He also tried, but the National Assembly refused.
Well, so you have given examples.
But there are examples of where that has not happened. I mean, that has succeeded. Uganda is one of them, correct? Algeria. You can talk about Cameroon. You can talk about... There are a lot of countries around the continent.
Can I then ask you a question?
Sure.
In those countries where the leaders tried to change and they didn't change, what happened? Is the people resisted?
Yeah, but basically what you are saying is that, frankly, there are societies perhaps where civil society perhaps is more active than in other places, or where, in fact, conditions permit the ordinary people to express themselves. But you have countries where you have an incumbent president who is supposedly a retired military general, but who, in fact, as commander-in-chief of the armed forces, is always wearing military fatigues and sometimes putting even a gun across his chest. What does that tell you?
No, well, you mentioned President Obasanjo and all this, but if I go back to... who was also a military man. But when he tried to change, it didn't work. You mentioned Nigeria. But let me take you back.
Tangier, until he was toppled by the military.
You see, the point then I'm trying to bring across...
The Ugandan president actually paid members of parliament money he characterizes as facilitation. Another word for it, of course, is bribe. Yes, you can blame the members of parliament in 2005, but they were bribed and they decided to change the constitution so that the president could stay in power.
Well, if you can get a parliament that can be bribed,
yes,
then that tells me that the people failed in having those kind of members of parliament that can go and sell the sovereignty of the people through this pocket money. I don't think there is a leader that can be able to buy a parliament and buy every member of parliament in that way.
What can the AU, for example, do? I mean, is there something the AU can do about that, frankly? Because sometimes they have a situation where the law is used to undermine democracy.
Now, that's a very good question, and let me answer it this way. First of all, if there is a leader who tries to change the constitution, we have a mechanism, various mechanisms. There is, for instance, what we call early warning.
Mm-hmm.
Such, we don't, as I said at the beginning, practice mega diplomacy.
Are you doing anything about Rwanda?
We go behind and talk to such a leader and say, what they are doing, it may not be in the interest of the country.
Mm.
And you can perceive it from the country.
Mm.
There are situations that there may be genuine support where people feel they want to support a leader.
Mm.
You leave it to the people.
Mm.
But where you feel the leader is trying to impose himself, we do normally we'll go and wonder.
What about the International Criminal Court? You know, there is, a perception that the court is really biased against Africa. And yet, despite the fact that people like, Jean-Pierre Bemba from DRC, Thomas Rubanga from DRC, the first person, in fact, to be convicted, despite the fact that these people were there, you did not hear that noise. You started only hearing that noise when African presidents were required to actually go to The Hague and answer to certain crimes. Does it mean that in Africa, only presidents are Africans?
I think you missed the point, what the African countries, and I think our voice was drowned in the perception that it, because it was leaders, that Africa was not talking about justice.
Mm.
You see, in a country, there are two things that you must protect, that you must have peace, stability, and justice. And you can't have one without the other. You cannot have justice where there is no peace. And if you have seen what has happened, some countries have been destroyed if you don't allow a process that would allow leadership or integrity of the country. Look at what has happened,
Somalia,
for instance, the case of Libya.
Libya.
You come and take the leader out, the country is now disintegrating in a very bad way.
What are you doing about Boko Haram in Nigeria? Yeah.
And so what is it that you are trying to achieve? Africa was at that time saying, let's do things differently. Nobody listened.
Unfortunately, my brother, Erastus Mwencha, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Erastus Mwencha, the deputy chairperson for the African Union. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.